these kind of moments cannot be planned or scripted.
If it happens and you happen to be there, then that's good for us. But if we don't get it, then that's just the way it is. So a lot of it is spending time. These kind of documentaries, you really need to be close with the subject and be willing to spend a lot of time with them.
Welcome to the Dementia Research Project. I'm Matt DeRay, and in this podcast, I explore the history, innovation, and champions in and around the world of dementia. Tan Pei Lin is a Singaporean documentary filmmaker known for capturing diverse and compelling stories. As a former producer at a non-profit digital platform, she championed impactful narratives on critical issues including mental health and education. Pei Lin directed Lady, a powerful documentary that tells the story of a family navigating the challenges of early onset Alzheimer's.
Hi, Pelin. How's it going?
I am good. I'm good. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
So you produced a very powerful documentary called Lady. Before we get into that, could you share with the audience maybe your filmmaking journey leading up to that?
Sure. So I have been in the industry for about 8 years. So I've done a mix of like commercial documentaries and also non-profit micro-documentaries. So I started my documentary journey in the classic way in a production house where, you know, I started right from the bottom as an associate producer, worked on a lot of commercial TV documentaries. And after 5 years of that, I was like, okay, I wanted to do something more meaningful. So after that, I moved on to a nonprofit digital storytelling platform. So we worked with a lot of different like NGOs and MPOs to create like micro documentaries to help them have a call to action. So for example, if they needed volunteers, the micro documentary was like focused on the call to action for volunteers. So I felt that that was like really meaningful because we worked on a lot of different causes like mental health, refugees, you know, women's health, equality. So that really opened my eyes. And that was something I always wanted to do in my storytelling. Yeah, so I think Lady was the first big independent project that I worked on with two other friends that didn't have like a client telling us like, oh, we want the message to be this or we want this to be this way. It was like full like creative freedom. So that was like really, really great experience for us.
Your experience in impact storytelling, right? Just to take one step back.
Yeah.
What was the key learnings in terms of what does it take to move people and get them to adhere to these call to actions, right? What is that secret sauce you found in that period?
I mean, it's not very secret. It's not a big secret, but I think the key to like telling good stories is having like an emotional arc that people can relate to. NGOs and MPOs, like they do a lot of things. You know, so there's a lot of programs, there's a lot of statistics about the cause, there's a lot of like hard facts that are very important, but sadly the case is that's not what moves people. Like you can throw like a bunch of like facts in the video about like, you know, how many women need help, but that just doesn't like click in people's minds. I think so it's always important to find like an emotional arc, you know, something human that like people can relate to in a story. And I think that's the thing that like grabs audiences.
Which brings us nicely to Lady. Could you share the genesis of this?
Yeah, so the genesis actually came from my producer, Yiming. So she's like one of my teammates. And so she was working very closely with City even before this documentary even happened. Like she had gotten a contact through Lian Foundation, which is another organization in Singapore. And she was doing like photos with her, you know, like a, sort of like a photojournalism project. And I think she went for one of those like incubators where they recommended, you know, this would be like a good documentary. And so I think she decided to take it, like to take on that project, to do a documentary. And that's when she kind of like roped me in. First, she was just like asking for advice, you know, how can I develop this into a documentary? What's the budgets and all that? And I kind of got invested in a project as well. So I just self-invited myself and be like, kind of formed this team with another teammate called Kelly, who was like a journalist. So we all have like strengths in different areas. And that was really cool.
And prior to this, what was your exposure to Alzheimer's, dementia?
No, actually, before Lady, right, I did not have any like direct contact with anyone who had Alzheimer's. And I mean, I knew of it. I knew what it was. I roughly knew the symptoms that came with it, you know, like forgetfulness, you know, memory loss and all that. But I did not know the degree of it and like the intricacies of it as a disease, yeah.
So when you're going into this, as a director, what's your words of comfort to someone like Siti, who's literally opening up her world, her family's world, and Gary as well? What's your messaging to her? How do you convince her that her story is safe with you?
Actually, for Siti, right, as you've seen in the film, she basically is someone who like wears her heart on her sleeve, and she's very open. And to be honest, she didn't need a lot of convincing, because I think for her, she did mention that the process of filming itself is quite cathartic for her. So it was like an outlet for her. And yeah, I think somehow she did like trust us with it. Like we did meet up before that, you know, talk to her, and she was very open. And yeah, we didn't have to like really like convince her. Like, yeah, she was really, really open from the moment I met her and very like willing to share her story.
Could you share some of the research you underwent before you actually got started? Because jumping ahead a bit, I saw a really interesting use of home footage, of animation. In your research process, how were you thinking of putting this puzzle together?
So when we first spoke to Siti, right, and she was like telling us all these like different anecdotes and stories about her past experiences, and we were just wondering like, oh, how do we like visualize that? Because it's still a visual medium. We need good visuals to kind of like bring this story across. Animation is always, like, I've always loved animation, and I always feel that animation is like a really good tool to even talk about serious topics. So we really wanted to use like animation to kind of talk about these past anecdotes that we were not able to visualize. And we wanted to use it in kind of like a surreal, kind of like abstract, but not too abstract way to kind of get that, to bring out the emotion of it being like complex and kind of use it to like reflect what Siti was feeling. And we also chose very like vibrant colors because Siti is a very like animated character. She's very like optimistic, and we wanted that to reflect her personality, but also be able to reflect the emotions that she was going through. So it's not unserious in that ways. And like, we were also researching on for dementia, what were the tests that people undertook to be able to test like their cognitive skills. And I think one thing came up was the clock test, you know, where they had to like draw a clock. Like if you could draw a perfect clock, then you're like, you're fine. But if your clock starts looking very like the numbers are outside the circle and the hand is like out of place, then there's something up. So we kind of use like the clock graphic as well as part of like a way to signify progression in different chapters of the film. Yeah.
There's a moment early on in the film, I think in the first half, where Gary asks Siti, who are you?
Right?
How do you capture these type of moments while still there has to be some element of separation?
Yeah.
How do you document this?
I think for us, we went with the approach of really just like fly on the wall observer, because I feel that these kind of moments cannot be like planned or scripted. Like if it happens and you happen to be there, then that's good for us. But if we don't get it, then that's just the way it is. So I think a lot of it is like, okay, spending time. If you spend more time, then the probability of like capturing those moments are higher. Yeah, so sometimes it's really just luck. Like you just happen to be there, the camera's pointing the angle, and like we capture it. Yeah, spending time. I feel like these kind of documentaries, you really need to be close with the subject, you know, close with your profiles, and be like willing to spend a lot of time with them. And that's how you capture those moments, I think.
When was this film, Palin? Like, what period? Because it seemed like it was towards the tail, like, during the pandemic period.
Yeah, it was. So, I think we started filming at the, oh my gosh, I think it was in the middle of the pandemic. Maybe, like, either middle or, like, second half, because masks were still, like, compulsory. So, if you see, like, some of them are, like, wearing masks during the, in the scenes. But it was definitely during the second half because we were allowed to go out and like shoot at people's houses, even though they had the 5 people in the house rule, but we still managed to make it work because our team is so small, like documentary. But yeah, so yeah, it was during the second half of pandemic.
What were some of the other challenges you encountered, which maybe typically face in your previous work?
One huge challenge was unpredictability, because I think in my previous work, you know, there's always a schedule, right? You're always like, okay, I have like 4 days to shoot this documentary, and the organization like arranges everything. You're like, okay, you come on these 4 days, you talk to these profiles, you know, you film one day at their house kind of thing. So everything's kind of planned in that way. There's nothing that like pops out of the blue. But I think for this documentary, because it's so like free-flowing, we didn't have a set number of days of shoot. It's like whenever we needed to go, we would just plan for it. And it's also like remembering that these are like real people's lives. So they have things going on. Sometimes things may happen with Gary and can't do anything. So it's more of like unpredictability of anything can happen. You just got to be prepared for that.
This is where the beauty of small, tight-knit teams come into play, right? Just ride the waves. And I suppose it really translated for me, at least into the documentary, that it seemed like it was made by a very close personal team, that love and care was in the final product.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, so like the whole team, right, is basically my friends that I've known from like previous projects that I've worked on, and I really like respect their craft. And so they're not just like people that I work with, but people that I do call my friends and hang out with. I mean, most of them, but a lot of them I have worked with before. So we kind of know the level of craft that they bring to the table, and you know that they will be able to bring the vision to life. And I think that's very important in working on like a project like this together, that you have to bring on people that you trust and that you know that is able to handle the topic delicately and to treat it with like care as well.
When you were planning out the outline for this story, I don't want to give a spoiler, inform the audience what happened, but it points back to your whole point around unpredictability.
Yeah.
How do you, the director, adjust the storyline accordingly?
So I think with documentaries, like at least independent documentaries, I feel that, okay, so I think in film production, not just independent, but any film production, I think we have been, most of us in the industry are kind of used to like things not going our way. So like, you know, Murphy's Law, right? Anything can happen, and to always be prepared for that. So I think when, you know, the unexpected thing happened, we were obviously shocked because it was sudden, but we also knew that, okay, this is what's going to happen next. You know, we give space, we give a bit of time to like recalibrate. You know, there's like, oh my God, it's so hard to speak without spoiling it. Like, but yeah, just, I think it was just important to note that, okay, these things were like out of anyone's control. It's more of like, what are the steps we can take to kind of like keep it going while also maintaining that like empathy and compassion for everyone involved and not push anyone. Yeah. So like human first and then production.
And I have to say, you did a really elegant job. The two sons. So, and they seem so mature in managing it. How are they involved in this entire thing?
Yeah, so honestly, like, they were quite shy, and I don't think they wanted to be filmed a lot. So I think it was just lucky that we had that scene at the end where they allowed us to film them. But other than that, I mean, the teenagers, we get it, you know, like they process their emotions in different ways and they just want to like play their games and all that. So it's like we totally understood. So I think for us, like, it was more of whatever we could get, we just make do with what we have. Yeah, I think we were just lucky to be able to get that last scene where the son was willing to like speak about his experience.
So this making a film and then getting it out, what are some of the collaborations that were helpful for you to make people see it?
Yeah, the hard part is always getting it out because you always need a lot more funding. But I think we were quite blessed because for the film itself, we did have two funders. Like, we had like funds from two organizations, Lian Foundation, another nonprofit called Majority Trust. So when the film was completed, Majority Trust actually helped us fund like a screening. But it wasn't like an open screening, it was like a private screening that included like their donors, and we could invite like family and friends. So that was the first screening that we ever had. And I think that gave us a lot of like stepping stones to like other screenings. Like, we met people there who were like interested in screening it at, you know, their workplace, or we met people there who were like interested in organizing like other screenings. So that kind of created that ripple effect. The more people saw the film, the more they were like, oh, sharing their contacts and all that kind of stuff. So we did have a lot of companies, a portion of the screenings were like companies wanting to screen it for their employees. And then there were also some like public screenings that we were organizing. And so we did at the Esplanade and the National Library. And for us, like, public screenings were really important because that was the point, to get it out, to get people to share, to spread the awareness of young onset dementia. I think that's been really good, yeah.
Actually, it was also interesting to learn about some of the care services through watching this documentary, right? Things like Homage, it's capturing the daily activities, right?
Yeah, it was a natural part of like City's routine. So it was like whatever she was using, we just followed her. It's not like we had to feature any additional services that were not in City's life. So I think that was crucial. But it did give like a little insight into like other caregivers that, you know, these services were available. And I'm pretty sure there are more that are coming up that will not feature in the film.
Sorry, more care services, you mean?
Yeah, more care services. Recently it's been in the news a lot, like young onset dementia has been on the rise. And people are concerned the impact on the family is very different from when someone above 65 gets it, because, you know, the children are younger, there are more bills to pay when someone younger gets dementia. There is like more ongoing conversation about the different types of services that might be required for like younger persons with dementia as compared to an elder persons with dementia.
What's been some of the feedback for this movie? I'm sure you must have gotten a lot of caregivers responding to this.
Yeah.
Any interesting stories coming out of this?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head, but I do know that there were friends who have watched it and made them realize that, oh, like, were the symptoms that like my father or grandfather exhibiting like dementia? And then that kind of like prompted them to like do a check. And I think that was important because a lot of times like dementia symptoms can be brushed off as like growing old or, you know, personality. So I think that was really important. But I think there were stories from other like screenings and panel discussions, caregivers could like really resonate with the experience, the shared experience. Because the point was also to talk about what it means to be a caregiver, right? The different emotions that arise from caregiving. Like, it's not just, it shouldn't be seen as like a selfless, sacrificial act. It should be acknowledged that, you know, caregivers also experience a lot of shame and guilt because, you know, sometimes you're so exhausted, but can't say it because like there's another sicker person. It's like, how do you deal with that dilemma? So I think that was an important thing that we wanted to talk about and bring up conversations about.
There's almost two distinct types of audiences, right? Those who live it and those who may not maybe know about it.
Yeah.
For the caregiver part, like, and you talked about emotional arcs, right?
Yeah.
And towards the end, I can't imagine any other caregiver not wanting to reach out through the screen and just give Sydney a hug. Yeah. And I suppose it applies to everybody, right? Because yeah. I think she's just so vulnerable in her sharing.
Yeah, she is. And I've never met anyone like her who is so comfortable in front of the camera, like so comfortable, like vulnerable in front of the camera. I've never met anyone like her. And I think that definitely plays a part in why like people resonate with her story, because she's just so like, she's like, this is me, this is my life, this is my experience. And you can't help but like feel something.
You have any advice, Bilin, for creative storytellers who want to tell stories around dementia, Alzheimer's, because it's not an easy topic to tackle?
Yeah, I think you should always, I mean, my advice is to tell a story that you want to tell, that you are interested in, that you have like passion for, because I feel that that's when the story comes alive, you know, when you are working on a topic that you care deeply for. Because if not, I think it's hard to garner that kind of like motivation to talk about something that you have no interest about. So I think it's important to, you know, find the message. You know, what is the message that you want to say? And what do you want to inspire from your film? Or like, what do you want to provoke from your film? I think that's important.
How I found out about this was via a Dementia Singapore post. I think it was a couple of months ago.
Okay.
Right. So what's next for Lady in terms of when can people see it in the comfort of their homes or screens?
Good question. I think, so right now we are still trying to organize more like public screenings. So Lady will be at Mental Health Film Festival in Singapore in early November. And it will also be screening at our Tampines Hub, which is like an open space, like kind of like an alfresco kind of setting, so that anyone can like go there and watch. But I think we're definitely trying to figure out a way, like how can we make it like accessible online? Can we put it up online and like if people just donate like a token, that sort of thing? So we're still in the works about talking about how to make it available online for everyone. Yeah.
Speaking about Dementia Singapore, how have they been helpful in getting the word out for this particular project?
So there was like a huge screening. So I was away in New Zealand for 1 year. So a lot of the work organizing was done by my producers, Yiming and Kelly. So I think there was a huge screening that was also held like last year that Dementia Singapore like organized. But yeah, so it was kind of nice because like a lot of people like invited. It was a big screening. And I think that also helped push the word out. So I think that they have been really, really helpful with like spreading the word, you know, supporting us in this journey as well. Yeah.
That's cool because these type of support networks, especially for indie filmmakers, because God knows, like making a film is a challenge in itself, but then getting it out there is a whole other challenge.
Yeah, for sure. It's so hard.
I'll tell you my favorite moment from the movie. I think it was City retelling this story of Gary pointing at Lee Hsien Loong.
Oh, yeah.
And then telling City, why is she not respecting the PM? You did a really good job capturing the balance in the lived perspective. So that's fantastic because it's not all gray.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty like, it was like a lighthearted anecdote that kind of showed the contradictions that like City felt. She's like, probably she'd be like, oh, so silly, but I'll just do it because he's happy. And I think that's like the motto that they kind of adopted as a family, you know, when helping Gary through his journey, was like, you know what, just go with the flow. It doesn't matter what people think, but, you know, you just have to go with the flow. I think that was one of the key things, yeah.
How can people reach out, support, follow your work, Pei-Ling?
So we have a Lady website. It's called ladythedocumentary.com. So we do post our latest events up there. So if you'd like to follow the events, you can check that out. And for social media, we have a Lady account as well called Lady the Doc, D-O-C. And we also post like updates and upcoming events up there. Yeah, so I think those are the two ways, the best way to find out like when's the next screening. Or even if you want to connect with us, you can always like connect with us through one of the platforms. Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, it's always nice to hear from people and to see how else we can like collaborate, talk about these kind of things.
Okay, great. Is there anything I probably should have asked but didn't ask that you'd like to convey to the audience?
I think I'm just curious also, because you yourself are a caregiver as well, right?
And I was.
Yeah. So as a caregiver watching this film, was there like anything new that you took away from the film, from the experience? Because you have been through the experience.
I think it's similar themes in different settings, which is why I brought up like things like homage, things like Alzheimer's Association, the counseling services. These type of services, not, I guess, widely accessible in some parts of Kuala Lumpur, and then I suppose in more rural parts of Malaysia, Southeast Asia. So that's one. I found the strength of Siti and her sons like really profound. Mm-hmm. I think I wasn't half as strong as those guys. so that was really inspiring to see.
Yeah, that's lovely to hear. Thanks for sharing.
Fantastic. All right. Thanks, Pei-Ling. This has been great.
Oh, good. Thank you. I enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you want more of these type of stories, interviews, and guests, please follow the Dementia Research Project wherever you get your podcasts. Onwards and upwards.